Captain Kirk, Captain Picard, or Captain Sisko?
What I need some clarification again. What's the criterion?
That's the thing. There never is any.
There's not. Yeah. There's not like
nope.
Best whatever
just,
or
nah, you just gotta pick one.
First date.
We,
I mean, I don't
we
know.
Make
I need
up the terms as we argue arbitrarily.
Yep. Just okay. Roll with it. Whatever feels right. Just go with it, Rob.
Okay.
Are we talking? Are we talking new Kirk or old Kirk?
Let's for the sake of
Kelvin Clerk is what he's asking. Kelvin Kirk.
Kelvin Clerk.
Kelvin Clerk.
Let's.
The irony is, what the listeners don't know is this is the most sense we've made so far today.
It really is.
Kelvin Clerk. So.
We are in rare form, guys, so this is going to be a very interesting podcast, and our favorite troublemaker friend, Rob Wallace, is back with us as well.
So, for clarification, we're going William Shatner, Kirk.
Okay.
Not other guy who's
Chris Pine.
To try me and saying that I'm not going to... Chris Pine, thank you.
Well, then I'm going to have to say this. I'm going to answer this question based on practice. And that is that I still annually rewatch Deep Space Nine and only I'm from beginning to end and only rewatch selected Next Generation episodes. So I'm going to have to go Sisko, I think, which surprises me to say, but I'm having a hard time coming up with a criterion that doesn't make me look like a hypocrite. So
interesting.
That's going to be my answer.
All right.
I never rewatch original Indeed. Series unless I'm trying to show someone Menagerie. I mean, that's pretty much it. Balance of Terror, the first Mark Lenard episode back the first season, which is a good one.
Okay.
Before he was Spock's dad, back when he was a Romulan. Spoiler alert. Is that okay, Kyle? Can I talk about that?
One's fine. I mean, we already established
1966.
All...
You've seen it, right?
For whatever it's worth, they're having a lot of fun at my expense today, guys. I could use some friends right about now, because all mine on screen are just... I've had every technical difficulty... under the sun and
okay
still...
Do you want friends or do you want sycophants?
I'm gonna be in a new time zone before we get this thing finished. That's all I know.
Hey,
I gave my answer.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think
Alan,
of who I would
Ashley,
like prefer to be led by.
Ooh, well that'd be, that's interesting,
right?
Yep.
I think professional development wise I'd pick Picard.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if I had to choose someone that I would want to be my captain, I'd choose Picard. Because I don't really trust Sisko for a lot of reasons. Though I enjoyed Deep Space Nine quite a bit. Though I keep thinking of Shatner's like overacting, especially when they're like having to deal with any sort of mental trauma, and he kind of just flails.
Or combat.
And I just feel like that would be really funny if you were taking it seriously to just be the straight man in that situation.
Well, that was Leonard Nimoy, right? I mean, that was always Nimoy being the straight man in that
right,
situation.
Exactly. But just like standing next to him being like, you're seeing this, right?
Yeah.
This is what your training developed. This is the peak of the academy.
This is your best.
I will say, that I feel like much of that is caricatured, I think.
Oh, for sure.
He became a caricature post-Trek more than he was during Trek.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but then he just decided to lean into it. So,
exactly.
You know,
he made a very wise career move.
He did. Good for him.
And then he started doing cell phone commercials as that character, except James Bond, not Star Trek.
Right. Exactly.
It might... also be worth noting that if you are the straight person sitting back and observing this, you really hope you're not the one red shirt.
Yeah, that's
right. Situation.
That's a good point.
No, that's fair. No, I feel like I would like mix genres and be like the Jim Halpert of Star Trek, just constantly looking at the camera. Like,
looking at the camera?
Yeah, exactly.
We're all seeing this, right? Everybody else is seeing this, yeah?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Just tied a bunch of tribbles in the ceiling tiles of the...
Well, you know that CBS All Access, it says they're coming out with more Star Trek shows, so what we need is one that has an office feel to it. They're saying they're all going to have a different vibe to it. So we need one that has an office feel.
Just like a documentary.
Just look at the camera.
Feel.
It's a documentary. Yeah, the whole show is a documentary style. I think we got something here. I think we're on to this $1 million idea right here. We could finally get that goodness. Captain Worf series and have him, you know, Michael Dorn just keep staring at the screen every night.
Okay. About that. Super fun fact. So. Okay. This morning, my parents and I, and my sister and I, went out to dinner at a little town in the Black Hills, and my dad had to meet with somebody to take care of some business stuff, so my mom and my sister and I were just kind of wandering around the town, bopping into all the touristy places and stuff, and we walked into this little antique store, and it's got, like, a bunch of, like, South Dakota antiques, right? And towards the back, I walk over, and there's a bookshelf, and the first thing I notice sitting on this bookshelf is a box that says "Learning Conversational Klingon" with Michael Dorn.
Yes. Like,
why is this? This is the most out of place thing.
Wow!
And it was $5, and if it hadn't been on cassette tape and I had no way to listen to it, I totally would have bought it. Well, just
so,
because.
So, do you speak Klingon? Well, I can order in a restaurant. You know?
Yeah.
Is the gok fresh?
I would love if you had a car that had a tape deck in it, just to have that on, so every time if you're like giving someone a ride,
nuke
that automatically starts playing.
I will say for our listeners who have the desire to learn Klingon, it is a language in Duolingo.
Yeah,
you can learn conversational Klingon in Duolingo.
Isn't it really limited though?
I honestly don't know. I just know that it's in there. I've been trying.
Yeah, you have to unlock the full version of Klingon.
Yeah. Understood.
I've been trying to pick up a little bit of Gaelic because, I mean, we live in the land of Gaelic, so I figured it's probably a good idea for me to see if I can at least pick up a little bit just for funsies.
We found, in our cottage, we found they had a copy of the New Testament in Scots.
Oh, nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Does it have the Psalms?
No.
Darn.
I know.
You know, a lot of times you can get New Testaments and Psalms, and I was kind of hoping that there would be, because I've gotten a copy of Psalm 23.
Okay.
But if you had an actual official, you know, nice Scots.
No, I'll look, because they do have way more books than we know what to do with, which is not a complaint by any means. Some of them are a little odd, but that one, when I was dusting off the bookshelves, I found it, and I was like, this is amazing. So I'll see if they have any other books in Scots.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
All right. I still have to give my answer here. I think for similar reasons, like, my exposure to Deep Space Nine is limited.
Yeah, to the episodes that I've said, hey, you need to watch these
exactly.
episodes.
Exactly. I'll admit, Captain Kirk was Star Trek for me. Like, I didn't see a lot of Picard until much later in life, and even then there's still I love the campiness of Captain Kirk, and especially why can I not think of his name now? Holy crap.
I don't even know where we're going.
Original Captain Kirk.
William Shatner.
Actor.
William Shatner.
Holy buckets, that just completely fell out of my head.
Shut your head.
I think I like William Shatner's campiness, and so I think for that reason I have to go Captain Kirk.
Interesting. Campy. Huh.
Kyle.
Well, I am going to have to say, so I was really debating back and forth whether I would include Sisko or Janeway. And the reason I landed on Sisko, because I wasn't sure if you guys, Alan and Ashley, had watched much of now I'm gonna forget which
Voyager.
Voyager, thank you.
Yeah. No, I haven't watched much.
We're
Voyager.
Falling apart today, guys. I didn't think you had, so that's why I kind of shied away from that, because I knew Robin specifically mentioned, yes, so you and I can nerd out on Voyager, because I really enjoyed Voyager, too.
Well, that's something else we'll disagree on, but go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. anyway, so that's why
my complaints
Cisco.
About Voyager have nothing to do with with anyone on the show, or I mean, really, it has mostly to do with the showrunners. I felt that, I guess, the best way I could say it is, if I think that the reboot of Battlestar Galactica shows us that had Ronald Moore had creative control of Voyager like he wanted, it would have been a better television show. That's all I want to. I feel like Voyager tried to play it ultimately safe and become Next Gen 2. And they didn't take some chances and do some creative and brave things that they could have done with that setup that they had. That's my main complaint. I have no complaints about anything, really, other than the fact that I feel like they didn't take enough chances. They were trying to, I feel like they were trying to protect the cash cow and just didn't want to take the risks they need to take. So,
yeah. No arguments there. No, I hear that for sure. I still liked what they did, but yeah, no, it definitely felt like a show that had a lot more potential that didn't get capitalized on.
Right.
I'll agree with you
now,
there for sure.
That said, the episode Death Wish with Q's first appearance before he became a caricature on Voyager is one of my absolute favorite Q episodes.
Mm. Yep.
Where one of the Q is trying to commit suicide. That is an exceptional, exceptional episode.
Yes.
It really is.
Yep.
So.
Anyway, so my answer, I have to land, I think. Kirk, I just have a hard time relating to, so I've never been that into Kirk.
What? Why? he's so down to earth.
I mean, for obvious reasons.
Yep.
Because he's so down to earth. Cisco, I really liked, but I think I just am too pretentious and I enjoy Picard too much. Because every time I walk up to my teapot, I really just want to say, tea, oh, great.
Earl Grey, hot.
And have it just spit it out to me.
Well, if you tried that today, it would spray all over the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because nothing is working for you today, technologically.
No. No, I am having a really bad technology day. It is true.
We all have them. It does happen. So we empathize with you, Kyle. But hi, everyone. This is episode 70 of the Minimax podcast. And like I said earlier, we're joined again by Rob Wallace. This is what, fourth?
It is.
Fourth time on the podcast. Yep. You are our most recurring guest.
Hey, how about that? I won.
You did.
He says with such enthusiasm.
Before we get going too far, though, we do have a little bit of housekeeping that we do need to take care of. We got a voicemail. So, as we have previously, I'm going to go ahead and drop that in here in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, y'all. This is Alistair McNear again. I just got done listening to episode 62, so I'm a little bit behind. But I really enjoyed having Ashley and Alan back on after they successfully got to Scotland. It was really nice listening to their description of everything. I could see it as they were describing it, so that was really enjoyable. I enjoyed your episodes too, Kyle, but yeah, it's good to have everybody back in that same flow. And as far as the Smeagol episode goes, it's I like Smeagol voice, but I don't necessarily want a whole episode of it, so it's really hard to like. Yeah, that's a thing. Anyway, have a good one, y'all. Thanks for doing what you do.
So, Kyle, I really feel like we need to just address an elephant in the room and ask you in a very pastoral way. Rob, can I ask you to ask the pastoral question here?
Okay.
Can you ask Kyle? Kyle, plug your ears. Can you ask Kyle how that makes him feel?
The adults are talking.
Oh, the sheer level of condescension.
That means you talk down to people.
Here's the thing. You know what? All you listeners out there.
This is kind Giles' affronted voice when he has to put his hands together, like staple his fingers, and then like like just gesture outward like he's like flicking off dirt. Like,
wow.
Be gone.
Yeah.
It's like when a substitute teacher is really pissed off at you because you're not paying attention to the Lorax.
I felt attacked for Kyle. If that makes any sense. That makes any,
thank you. Thank you, Rob.
I really was listening to that. I was, wow. I was feeling attacked for you at this point. Maybe I've just been in this pastoral. You know, I've only been this pastor now for 3 months, so.
I'd like to say you're really good at it. Just keep up the good work, Rob.
Thank you.
I feel very affirmed right now.
Alistair, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for telling us how much you like us. I feel really empowered now.
You know, it occurs to me, though, Alan, to move us along,
yes, sir.
That it might be worth mentioning that I have changed vocation since the last time.
It is true. I was going to ask you about that. That was my next question.
Yeah, that I after being an Old Testament professor for 20 years, I have accepted the call to a church in the Washington, D.C. area in McLean, Virginia. And so I'm a pastor full time now. Instead of just my hobby, which it was before, was pastoring local churches, I'm now doing that professionally. So,
how are you liking that as compared to academia?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have always wanted to bridge the gap between the academy and the church, and for 20 years I was doing that from the side of the academy, and now I feel like I'm doing it from the side of the church. That you know, I'm bringing a lot of the education stuff that I did to some of the education programs we have here, obviously. And I've discovered that pastoral care is, I don't know if it's easier for me now than it was. I don't know how much age is a factor in that. But, you know, I was last a pastor 20 years ago, and it was a lot harder to do pastoral care for me personally back then. But I think having a wife who was a chaplain and going through CPE vicariously through her and living with her has been a class in pastoral care all these years. So it's really been good. I've enjoyed it. It's been, you know, getting my feet back on the ground and figuring out what I'm doing. But yeah, all things considered, this has been good. The hardest part is, of course, we're a separated family right now. My younger son is finishing high school his senior year. And so my wife is still in Illinois while I am in a one bedroom in Virginia. So that's been the hardest part, being a separated family.
I can definitely understand that.
Okay, but like, you're not just in any one bedroom. You've got a pretty sweet, you're just like, I have a closet for a bedroom. No, you have a really nice apartment with a freaking garbage valet.
It is, I do. Hey, I should say I've never once used the garbage valet. Because... And I mean this literally, the trash is 20 feet from my front door of my apartment. I literally walk 20 feet down and slide my garbage down the chute. Why do people put their trash can in the hall? No, that's too much. That's too far. I'm just not going. The 20 feet. It's on this floor. It's beside the elevator. What are you doing? So no, I don't use the trash valet, smarty pants.
I'm
so
really
proud
of you.
That's some good self-control there, Rob.
But it is a pretty swanky place. Yeah, it's nicer. But there were a lot of really good deals on it because I think they were trying to fill up apartments and they were trying to, you know, hook me with all of their amenities, thinking I'll stay more than 1 year.
Yep.
And joke's on them. I'm taking the good deal and I'm running with it. Thank you very much.
That's always the best.
So, Rob, we are in the middle of a sci-fi arc that is, we're what, 5 or 6 episodes deep on this thing so far?
Quite a few,
I don't know. We've gone down so many rabbit holes. I'm just like, we're lost. We're never coming out of the sci-fi arc. It's just, just where we live now.
We spend
in the future.
Personally, I'm totally good with that, but that's okay.
Ashley, we're not. It's sci-fi. We're not going down rabbit holes. We're going down black holes
and wormholes.
And wormholes.
Okay, but why can't rabbits be sci-fi as well?
I think wormhole would be a little better. Just gonna say
wormhole. Yeah, that works. Yeah, I think that. I think that works better.
If you're ending up in a place that you didn't start at, and who knows what time it is when you get there, that, then wormhole works.
Yeah, and then it's full of rabbits as well. So it's like
that could be. You know, if the multiverse theory is correct, it could be a wormhole that takes us to a world of rabbits. It's like Howard the Duck, only with rabbits.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
So, Rob, we immediately thought of having you on the episode when we inevitably got around to having discussions surrounding both Star Wars and Star Trek. So for the sake of time today, we are going to tackle one of those, and we are going to chat about Star Trek, if yes. You haven't guessed that from the this, this, or that question today. So I'm going to yield the floor, because you and Kyle have far more experience here than I have in my entire body. So I yield the floor to you.
Well, believe it or not, let me just say, my Star Trek cred comes in an unusual way, because it actually comes from my grandfather. My grandfather, who was the quiet, kind, nice accountant growing up, and you know, church deacon and all, he was crazy about Star Trek. He loved it. And so he's the one that got me plugged into original series. He's the one that took me to Star Trek III. When Star Trek III came out, I was in Kentucky visiting my grandfather, and he got us in the car and took us to Star Trek III. He also took me to Empire Strikes Back, so I mean, that's fair. But he got me into it. So I was, for years, that was Star Trek for me, right? I mean, it was all we had, was that, the animated series. I read a few of the novels, but to be perfectly honest, they were not at the quality of some of the Star Wars novels, and frankly, some of the Star Wars novels weren't that particularly strong. I'm sorry, Kyle.
No, we can agree on that.
And so for the most part, I was into that. And when Next Generation came out, I was in high school, and so this was the greatest thing ever. Grew up with that. But really, I think even when it first came out, I was incredibly suspicious of Deep Space Nine, because I just didn't understand how a space station would work. They're just remaking Babylon 5. It's just not going to happen. And then all of a sudden I realized, holy cow, this is actually something different. They're doing something. And I was already in grad school at this point, and the themes that they were doing were, you know, interesting to me, fascinating to me in so many ways. Voyager, I was excited about, ultimately became a disappointment to me. As I said, it just felt safe. I watched it to the end, but it was like I was in a bad relationship. I just needed to see to the end, because I didn't want to break up with them. It's like, stayed together with Voyager for the kids. And and then Enterprise. Oh, by the way, that's one of the greatest lines. I should interrupt this. You know, we're a separated family, so my children are having a blast with this. They're approaching it one of two ways. They either treat it as though we're divorced, because, you know, well, like, yeah, going to dad's, it's his weekend. I'm going to dad this weekend. And so, or, and this is really the classic one, they treat me as though I'm dead. And so, like, the three of them went to the Trombone Shorty concert in Chicago, and they're sitting there, and Daniel looks over at Thomas and said, you know, dad would have loved this. Thomas is like, it's a shame he couldn't be here. I'm getting Snapchats while they're at Six Flags. Dad used to love going to Six Flags.
That explains some of the Snapchats I've received from Thomas.
Yes.
Who I just got one from just now.
So it is, so that's something. Anyway, my best one was when Daniel looks over at Thomas and says, hey, you know how they say that when parents split up, it's not the kid's fault? This time it actually is. So, yeah, it actually is. So anyway, he's not wrong. As far as Enterprise was concerned, you know, I liked what they were trying to do, but I felt like they just couldn't stick with it. I mean, there were just so many things they had a hard time with, like, yeah, we're going to show how hard it is without a universal translator. At which point, the reality is then, really? You're going to do that? So we're going to go subtitles the whole time? Or you're just going to have people stare at each other not understanding what's going on? That's what's going to happen? It's like, you know what? Maybe we can fix that universal translator and people can talk to each other. So, I mean, that I think it was just a little, I don't know if they overreached or it just wasn't going to fit real well in that particular, that generation.
Sure.
So. But when Star Trek Discovery, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. My thinking when Star Trek Discovery came out and it said, oh, yeah, it's going to be streaming only on CBS's exclusive all-access channel. I said, look, I love Star Trek, but I'm not paying $5 a month to watch Star Trek. And then it they said, and Doug Jones is going to be cast as one of the aliens. Mm-hmm. Like, ah, oh, dang it. I know Doug. I like Doug. Doug Jones has grabbed my face. I, you know. I might need to watch this. And Jason Isaacs is going to be the captain. Ah, damn it. I'm going to have to pay $5 a month. So that's what happened. I mean, that was the whole thinking process of that. And so I watched it and immediately thought, my gosh, they're playing with the canon. And the more I stayed with it, the more I realized they were actually trying to be very carefully sensitive to the canon.
Yeah.
But at the same time, push it into some interesting ways. And if you have an appreciation of the canon, what Discovery did was just impressive to me. On top of, I think, in some ways, returning to where I think sci-fi is working at its best, and that is when it can serve as a parable for those issues that are facing contemporary society. I mean, Star Trek was at its best when it was doing that. And I think that in some ways, Star Wars is trying to do that now, which is not something they used to do. They used to be the grand fairy tale, mm-hmm. but I think they're picking up a little bit of that trying to serve as parable. And certainly Discovery is trying to do that as well with some of the issues that they've been facing the country. So that's my Star Trek survey, please.
Can I just latch on to something there, Rob? Yeah. Can I just point out, just, you know, you're mentioning
his mustache.
Some canon here. I'd just like to say we're talking some canon here. So I'm going to put a pin on that. I'm just going to say that, you know,
don't fall into this trap.
totally use that against you when we talk Star Wars. It's fine.
If you feel like you can, feel free.
The space gauntlet has been thrown.
Shots fired. And the affirmation fades.
I like my chances. I could get my microphone to work, for example. So,
low blows.
Why
low blows.
I keep agreeing to inviting this guy on again.
Yellow card.
Oh man. Anyway.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I remember when it came out, and Rob kept texting us saying, "You have to watch this. It's so good. You'd actually like it. It's so good. You need to watch this." And we're like, "We don't have CBS." And then people kept sending us codes to try to get like a free CBS.
I sent you at least two myself.
I know.
Yes.
They never worked. It was like anyone who ever sent them to us. They're like, "Nah, we can tell. You're not legit. This is not your code. You got this from somebody.
This is not the code you were looking for."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so it was ridiculous the lengths we were trying to go to watch the show. And then we finally moved to Scotland, and what's the first thing that pops up on Netflix as soon
Netflix.
As we recalibrate everything? Star Trek Discovery.
And so within a week,
what did you do?
We had binged.
Yeah, I was gonna
it.
Say.
Yeah, we did. We binged the whole thing. We were just like Snapchatting and Marco Poloing Rob as we were watching it. We're like, "So, what do you think about this? So this person did this thing. That was crazy." It was great.
So
a really great week.
Kyle has graciously given us permission to talk Discovery. So Rob, one of the questions I do want to ask you is, so you said that you feel like Star Trek is the best when it is acting as a kind of a foil for...
As parable.
Mm-hmm. A parable for society. What do you feel like... Where do you feel like they were pushing those buttons at with regards to Discovery?
I think that particularly... One thing, if you haven't watched Discovery, I'm sorry. This is the spoiler alert part. You need to turn off the podcast and
come back after you have watched it.
Move to Scotland. download or, Netflix.
Or, you know, I'm pretty sure they still give you the 1 week free trial, so you could binge it in a week. I mean, you can get it all done
easily.
But the Lorca character, I mean, the notion of the charismatic, manipulative individual who ultimately was xenophobic and power hungry felt somewhat relatable to things. Not personally, but
you really attached to that one, did you?
But yeah, boy, I really latched on to him. The narcissist, I like him.
He seems like a really cool guy.
Guys, but I think we need to be careful. If Rob starts using eye drops, we need to run right now.
Can I just say that was the most badass application of eye drops in the history of film.
It really was. I was like, I never thought Clear Eyes could be hot.
We have upgraded from Ben Stein.
I believe that I texted you that episode. I believe that was the episode that I texted you and said, okay, but when you watch this, you have to know that he just had the coolest application of eye drops in the history of cinema.
It's like space in his eyes. It's magic.
Awesome. But anyway, I mean, and they went even, I mean, no, normally you don't like your parables to be that heavy handed, but even going so far as to utter the phrase, we're going to make the empire glorious again. I mean, that's, yeah, he's not being subtle, right? And this is not that we're no longer being subtle
not
in this
a bit.
Context. So, I mean, those kinds of conversations about even about issues of diversity and what the Federation stands for, and do you hold on to principle versus more utilitarian ethics and compromise? Do the ends justify the means, or do you hold on to principle? I mean, those kinds of conversations were all through that heavily serialized show. I mean, it was one giant 15-hour episode. And I mean, there were a couple that were kind of self-contained, but not really. You couldn't really stop. I mean, you had to keep going.
Yeah, I feel like the only one that was really like you could watch it standalone was when they did the time shift. Like when
the Rainn Wilson episode? Yeah.
Yes.
When Rainn Wilson played Harry Mudd, yeah, that's the one I was thinking of as one that was standalone, but even that was connected to the earlier episode, or you don't understand why he's come back to make his choices.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I mean, he did, by the way, I like his Harry Mudd portrayal. I thought that was a nice job on that.
It was spectacular.
I think you need a particularly theatrical actor for that role. Yeah. Like it was weird for me because Alan and I had just seen him on stage at the Steppenwolf before we moved. Yeah. So I kept comparing his performance in Star Trek to that. And it was so similar in the regard where how he postures himself and how he even like articulates words. It was just really throwing me, but I think he's at his best when he has to be very like just extra in all of his
theatrical,
theatrical, but I was trying to come up with like a different,
more extra,
more
deep cut
as more super extra as much as I love Jason Isaac, and I do, I love Jason Isaac in everything he's done, including his, you know, 2-episode appearance on the West Wing, where he's Irish as opposed to, you know, whatever he plays accents so well. That's one thing. He impressed the heck out of me in that in this show.
Yeah.
For a couple of things. One, you know, my family, I think I may have alluded to, my family is from Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky. And so they've got very mountain accents. My wife is from Mississippi. She has a very sort of Mississippi accent. I currently live in Virginia, which, you know, I've lived in Georgia, which can sometimes have Southern sort of plantation Southern accent. Sort of the high Southern that they talk about. Jason Isaac's Southern accent that he does for that character is exceptional. It is not too much. It is subtle, and he acts with it subtle. And it is, you know, it kind of, and I was talking to one of my colleagues about how good he was in this role, and he said, do you think they're trying to portray that sort of Southern guy who joined the military? You know, that Southern fellow went to the military, got educated, but now kind of, so that it's kind of in the back, that accent, he's educated, but it's still kind of in the background. was like, that's exactly what he's doing with that part. And he absolutely nailed it. And so that, but also upon a rewatch, when after the mid-season break, which you guys would not have understood the mid-season break, the mid-season broke where they just defeated the ship of the I forget what they call it now, the ship of the corpses, the ship with all the sarcophaguses on the outside. They just defeated that ship and they end up in the parallel universe, Kyle. And and Jason Isaacs is portraying Lorca as not knowing where he is, but he's portraying Lorca as acting as though he doesn't know where he is. So when you watch him in that role, he's not only, you know, he's playing Lorca, but he is playing Lorca playing like he doesn't know what's going on. Even though if you're watching it, he's playing it in such a way that you realize he's acting like he doesn't know what's going on. I mean, that kind of nuance in his portrayal of that part of that series, it just blew me away. I mean, I was like, this guy is skilled in ways that, I don't think he gets enough appreciation for at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was spectacular. Discovery, if you guys haven't watched it yet, go find a way to do so.
Well, then I just ruined everything for you if you haven't watched it yet. I'm sorry.
I mean, we have been nice, Rob. We are subtly sidestepping around a little bit. So
we are? Okay.
I mean, I guess. But until you see it happen, though, anyone who hasn't watched it won't know what we're talking about because
that's possibly
we've been pretty coded. And it's when it's like that thing we say, you know when it happens, and you'll know when it happens.
You'll know when
it
happens.
And so, it'll all of a sudden, everything will click into place.
Mm-hmm. That acting, the acting I'm talking about, the kind of moment he did, it reminded me of when Hank Azaria talks about Mel Blanc. Every voice actor talks about Mel Blanc in hushed and reverent tones. I mean, whether it's Billy West or, whoever your voice actor is. Hank Azaria was saying that. And he said, you know, one of my favorite things about Mel Blanc, I'm watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon and Bugs Bunny is fighting with Daffy Duck. And all of a sudden they come back in and Daffy Duck is dressed like Bugs Bunny and Bugs Bunny is dressed like Daffy Duck. And now Bugs Bunny is imitating Daffy Duck and Daffy Duck is imitating Bugs Bunny. And Mel Blanc is doing all of these voices and he is doing Bugs Bunny so that you recognize Bugs Bunny. But that you recognize that Bugs Bunny is doing Daffy Duck. And Hank Azaria says, I've tried to do this. I can't do it. I tried to do Homer imitate Apu, and all I end up doing is Apu at the end of the day. I said, you just don't get how hard it is to layer the acting like that. And that's what I think that Jason Isaacs was doing in that part, in that episode. And it's for the next couple of episodes, and it's just exceptional to me the way that he did that, and the storytelling, and there was one episode that I remember thinking, wow, they are really pushing canon, they are really pushing what it means to be Starfleet, what it means to be Federation, and then at the end of the episode, I went, holy crap, they dialed back and did it, they actually. Brought it together and they did it in a way that was thoroughly Starfleet and thoroughly Federation. I was like, wow, the writing was just so impressive in that regard. So yeah. big fan.
Well, and speaking of acting, Doug Jones acting through however many inches of latex and makeup.
Yeah. Facial expressions through latex. I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah. It's what he is able to communicate just through his eyes and subtleties of his mouth is insane.
It's crazy. It is. He just was absolutely exceptional. And if you don't know Doug Jones, I promise you do know Doug Jones. You've seen him whether you saw him or not. He's spent his life under latex. Mm-hmm. He's been in Hellboy. He's been in what's the one Halloween movie that all you millennials like? Come on.
Mean Hocus Pocus?
Hocus Pocus, yeah. I haven't met a millennial that doesn't love Hocus Pocus. I don't know that I've ever seen it, but anyway.
I mean, it's so funny because we talk it up, but then people who have never seen it watch it and they're like, wait, seriously? You guys have better standards.
Yeah. Anyway, he's in that. Probably the part I know him and love him most from is the Buffy the Vampire episode Hush, where he's one of the gentlemen in the... He's the main smiling gentleman there that never speaks, and yeah, he was great.
Super creepy.
Doug Jones is and Shape of Water. He was the fish.
Wasn't he also in Pan's Labyrinth?
He was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's done tons of stuff.
Yep.
And I've never
he
seen
was the
role
first
where I'm like, well, that was a disappointment.
Nightman in the McDonald's commercial. That was his big break.
Wait, what?
The big McDonald's commercial in the late 80s. Come on, let's Mac tonight. He's the big guy.
No!
Yeah, that's Doug Jones. Yeah. That was his big break. So.
Oh, my God. I have to.
I feel like I'm IMDb today. Is it just me? I'm feeling a little IMDb-ish.
It's working for you, though. It's working
okay,
for you.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I remember Doug Jones specifically saying that part of what made him so hireable was the fact that he was just really, really polite to all the makeup artists that he worked with. That anytime he had to go through hours of application, he was super patient and very polite, mm-hmm. and people liked him
personally.
And
he wasn't allergic to latex. And,
right. Exactly. He was never rude. He was always patient. And I bring that up in any acting class I ever teach. I'm like, guys, it's partially about talent, but it's also just about being nice to people.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, you want to know, that's the old saying, right? You want to know what kind of person they is. You see how they treat the people that can't do anything for them.
Right.
And, I mean, that's when you know what a person's like.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, Doug Jones. Big fan club.
Doug Jones. I am a big fan of Doug's as well. And he came and spoke at our school and got a chance to talk to him. And that's, he hugs and grabs.
He's come to speak a couple times.
He has. He's gotten an honorary doctorate, actually. But the last time, when he was there, Doug is a hugger, a big time hugger, and so
he's such long arms to do it with.
So crazy, and so he you know, if with consent, of course, he will grab your face, and so in just about every picture someone takes with Doug Jones, he's holding onto their face, and I'm. And I grabbed his face while we were in the picture. So I've got a great shot on Facebook of Doug and I entwined as we're getting the picture. And I'm like, I got a picture with Doug Jones. So, anyway.
Oh, goodness.
So big fan. But and I will say that this is the most excited I have been about Star Trek since Deep Space Nine. And even now, I told you I do an annual rewatch of Deep Space Nine, which I'm going to go ahead and confess I'm in right now because I'm living by myself. But I am still amazed at the legs that show has. I can do without most of the Ferengi episodes, but... But the dealing with issues, this is, you know, the mid 90s, dealing with issues of refugees and how you resettle them and whether or not you accept them or not, dealing with issues of domestic terrorism and how much freedom you're willing to give up for how much, you know, how much security.
Yeah.
I mean, these are questions that were being asked before 9/11. I mean, it's one thing to be having these conversations with, you know, the remade Battlestar Galactica when you're dealing explicitly with this kind of stuff. But this was, you know, proleptic. This was, it's amazing the way they were doing that. That to me, and then not just that, but the issues of religion and how religion, obviously a personal concern of mine, you know, how religion features in and how faith, goes in. I mean, those are fascinating issues to me. And Deep Space Nine does that so, so well. That's, like I said, I haven't been as excited about it except until then. I mean, and again, functioning as Parable, right? That's the big strength for me. Yeah. So, Kyle, what's your favorite Deep Space Nine episode?
Oh my goodness.
Picking one.
That is a good question. It's been a while since I've watched my way through it.
There's a good chance if you describe it, I can remember it. I don't want to brag.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I just have to pick through what I remember and see. Oh, what stands out the most? I think for me, the thing with DS9 is I like to look back over how much great character development you get throughout the show.
Oh, yes.
That I think is not...
B characters, right? I mean, we're talking... I know about individuals who are I can ask you right now, what is your favorite character not listed in the opening titles? I know what the answer is going to be, but I'm going to go ahead and just ask the question because it's everybody's answer. Name is not in the opening titles. Best character not there. You want me to give you some? Would that help?
It might. Hold on. Give me.
Okay. All right.
Give me just a second. It's got a. I was just thinking about him too. Oh come on. I am seeing his face in my brain. Yes. The Cardassian commander.
And his name is Garrick, ladies and gentlemen. That
yes.
That is the name.
Thank
I knew
you.
I knew you would pick Garrick.
Yeah,
everybody picks Garrick.
Yeah.
Because he's the greatest character ever. He's a B character. And he develops from the second episode of Deep Space Nine all the way to the finale with layers upon layers of interest. And I know more about him than I know about Sulu, right? Than I know about Chekhov, that I know about Uhura, that I know about, frankly, that I know about Troy or Riker. I mean, they were able to develop those characters. You're exactly right in ways. And yes, Garrick is everybody's favorite non in the titles. I mean, my kids love, like, gosh, he's such a great actor. You know, and he is. He's just a great character and a great actor.
Yep. And to go through, because I cited him way back in, like, I think we were still in the single digits when we did that episode on favorite villains, and he was, like, way up there for me.
Is he a villain?
Like well, exactly. That's why I cited him, because he's so nuanced.
He's an
and there's
anti-hero.
So much
he's a...
to him. Yes.
He's great. He's
all
great.
Of that. Yeah. No, I think...
And
so
even
in
the end, you can't trust him. I mean, even at the very end, you know, his last words, you know, what? One never knows. And then off he goes, and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh. So yeah, he's a great one.
Yep.
But you still haven't come up with an episode.
I haven't, and that's where I'm struggling.
Can I give you three?
Sure, yeah, let's do that.
All right, I think my three, if I was going to pick them... apart from the 10-hour finale, which really it's what it is. It's that 10 episodes of last season. The episode Duet, which is the one in which Kira is trying to prosecute a suspected Cardassian for war crimes, only to find out that he's not the one that she thought he was, but that he actually was and that he wasn't. And the writing on that show was so good because that one... They didn't take the easy way, which I really appreciated. Anytime I'm surprised by the writing, I get excited. I was like, oh, wow, didn't see that coming. That was good. I liked In the Pale Moonlight, where Sisko gets the Romulans to enter the war, the Dominion War, where they have the question of ethics. How far are you willing to go to achieve a noble end? And then the other one I like, and which is strange for a pacifist, but the Siege of AR-558, where they are trying to hold that, that's basically a war show, where they're trying to hold the communications array. Nog loses his leg, and they're isolated on that planet. Those three for me, with Billy Mummy. Billy Mummy was actually in that. How about that for sci-fi crossover? do you guys know Billy Mummy? No.
Name's not ringing a bell.
Not by name.
No.
Lost in Space. He was the young boy in Lost in Space.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He was also on Babylon 5. I believe he had a character on Babylon 5 as well.
Okay.
That episode was just, that was a season 7 actually. That one I thought was very, very good. So I mean that's from season 1 to season 7. There's growth in all of the characters. And if I'm picking a favorite series for me, that's still number one. It's eminently rewatchable for me. Obviously I watch it every year. So.
Yeah. In the Pale Moonlight is the reason why I didn't pick Sisko for my captain.
You know, when I was thinking that was the reason I hesitated actually.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because I love the flawless characters. We've talked about that. I want the person to hold on to their integrity while they're trying to live in a world that's pushing against it the whole time and come out ahead. But I think his self-awareness there in that episode is what draws me back to it, about the reality of how hard that is. I mean, of course it is. So.
Yeah, I think it's his breaking the fourth wall and speaking directly to you. Yeah. And especially the final little bit of, do I care?
No, he said, I think I'd do it again, but I can live with it. I know I can live with it. And then it's computer, delete that personal log. That's the last phrase.
Yeah.
The whole thing is phrased in recording that log. And then at the end, you know what? Delete the log.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wonder
just how
much he can live with it.
Yeah. I think it was pretty late at night when we watched that episode. And I was fairly tired when we started. And then by the end of it, I was very awake and I had to pace a bit. I was just like, okay. Yeah. All right, Rob. Fine.
And an exceptional Garrick episode, by the way. That one. That's a really good Garrick episode.
Definitely.
Yeah, the two-parter of Garrick when he finally gets reunited with the Nombrin Tain and joins the Obsidian Order again for an invasion of the Gamma Quadrant to blow up the Founders. That's a good Garrick episode, also, where he's trying to figure out who he is and if he wants that old life again. And you realize at that point, I think, Kyle, he's not the villain he used to be.
He won't go
through with the torture of a friend like he would have years before. And okay, you know what? I feel like I'm monopolizing. You guys got thoughts?
I think I'm in. If we were to go back to Discovery, what I'm still puzzling over, not necessarily puzzling over, but what still makes me uncomfortable about Discovery is are the Klingons.
Oh yeah.
And literally everything that happens regarding the Klingons. Like there was a lot of needing breaks between episodes the further we got in.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Because of it being too
why?
I'm curious.
Well, Laurel is a character that I'm really, really struggling with for obvious reasons. And what's the dude's name?
Ash Tyler.
Asher, yeah,
Ash Tyler, yeah. That's a big plot point I forgot about. Yeah,
yeah, and it's despite everything else that has happened in Discovery, that's the one that I keep I don't fall one way or the other anymore. I did. I was super ticked about it. I texted you a ton.
You did.
And then the way it ended, I actually started yelling at her TV.
Yeah.
Can confirm. This did happen.
Well, you know, I liked that they did a pretty good job making the Klingons pretty sympathetic. I mean, some of them.
Sure.
In the first couple of episodes, you get that sense of, when with the Klingon Messiah, there's a little bit of pity you feel for that guy at the end.
Oh, definitely.
And
I think that's what ticks me off about it.
Right. You get their concerns on some level. That you know what? How dare they accuse the Federation of exactly what the Federation's doing? You know,
right?
there's a little bit of that you go, well, yeah, okay, I get that. I thought you were going to talk about their appearance or the ships or whatever, but no, that's not what you
meant. Not at all. No. Honestly, it's funny because we go and I'm like, oh, yeah, Klingons. They're like space orcs. That's fine. And so I was super comfortable. And made it uncomfortable for me because then I was really fascinated by their culture. And then I didn't like being fascinated with their culture because of everything that implied later.
That there was a lot of that. That was the one thing that you get a lot of canon pushback for folks is on that is because the Klingons do not have the traditional appearance that they really played with that. They played with the ships. And I mean, for me, it wasn't that hard to rationalize. I mean, for some reason, the Klingons are all hairless. And I think the argument that is coming out is that Klingons, when they went to war, decided to go hairless, and since the 24 Klingon houses have constantly been at war, nobody for the past 100 years, nobody's had hair. So you had hair before then, but then after that, and so this period of the century when no one's talked to the Klingons, they've all been shaved because they're all fighting with each other. But then now, say that again.
Not a bad strategy.
No, that's not it. And that because you have 24 individual houses, everybody has their own ships, everybody has their own concerns, everybody has their own whatever. And so that this coming season, the argument is that we're going to start seeing Klingons with hair, and we're going to start seeing a more unified looking ship designs that we get by the time 10 years later when Kirk and Spock and them are encountering Klingons.
Interesting.
That's why, that it took Laurel uniting them to do that.
Well, that makes total sense.
That's the rumor, anyway.
All right. I'm cool. I didn't have any issues at all with their appearance whatsoever.
Well,
I figured,
you're not
as
invested in the
with
canon
how detail
is.
Oriented they were with everything else. I was like, this is not something they're gonna overlook.
Yeah, it was something that everyone felt like they did. That, I mean, that was what the message boards are full of, and it's sad to me that I know that, but it's true. It's what everybody was upset about, was the appearance of the Klingons. They're not right. They're not canonical. There's no explanation for this. You've screwed up the ships. This, you know, you've pushed the canon. You've changed things too much. It's not right. Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody was saying.
That's what fan fiction's for.
Yeah, I guess
just
so.
Fix it in post.
Right, we'll fix it in post. Like Alan's going to try and do today.
So. Yeah, good luck with that one, buddy.
Well, Kyle, do you have any more closing thoughts? We're getting kind of close to time.
I mean, we've already established I have not had a chance to watch Discovery yet, so since we ventured back there, not a whole lot. I mean,
All right, your favorite Next Generation episode?
Ooh.
Just one.
Yeah, that I rewatched relatively recently. I latched on to Next Gen for some reason a little bit more, but I think after my second rewatch, I decided, no, I feel like I really did enjoy DS9 the most. Mm. It was convincing to me after watching Next Gen, because I found myself, and I like never do this because I'm way too much perfectionist, so I never skip episodes when I'm rewatching something, but I found myself doing that in Next Gen, like with I realized I had missed one through some weird hiccup, and I was like, I don't really care to go back. It was like I think it was the one where Data like he becomes or like they discover an ancient civilization or something like that, and he becomes viewed as a deity or that episode, and I was just like,
it was like a season 7 episode, I think. And
it was pretty late in the game. Yeah.
You can skip that one. That one's good. you can move on. Just move on. The one where he ends up with the little bumpy forehead. I've forgotten the episode now, but he ends up with the little thing, and he's like the sun god, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
that's the one. Yep.
Yeah, don't watch that one.
I was over it. Yep. Yeah. but I think if I had to go with...
Just one.
One favorite episode.
Like, right now, Kyle, you're going to go turn on Next Generation, and you're going to pick this episode to watch, and it's going to be...
Okay, so I don't often go for this type of episode. But when everything breaks loose with the Borg, and I can't remember, because the battle, they actually portray the battle of Wolf 359
in Deep Space Nine.
And that's what I thought. Okay. But there's the...
That's the pilot of Deep Space Nine.
That's right. Yes. Thank you. So I think it's the episode that's supposed to have occurred immediately after the battle, or possibly like during, before. It has to do with Wolf 359, and I can't remember if...
Are you talking about Best of Both Worlds Part 2?
Picard
has been
right.
assimilated and yeah, okay.
This really is your superpower, Rob.
It is quite good.
If I needed to establish my geek cred, I'm right here, man.
He's the Trekkopedia.
Like I said, I don't often go here, but the reason I think that sticks out for me is because I'm a sucker for the dramatic moment. Like, I'm a sucker for, like honestly, one of my favorite moments in the 2009 reboot is when Spock is going full bore at the Narada to just take it out in the tiny little ship with all the red matter. And then, like, in that instant, and the music's getting all intense, and I love Michael Giacchino, so, you know, that's all playing into it, too. And then the Enterprise drops out of warp and just takes out all of the missiles and manages to get Spock out of there. It's that kind of moment. I'm just a sucker for it, honestly.
Oh, interesting.
And that, for me, like, as much as, you know, on some academic level, I'm like, this is really lame, and I'm just really, like feeding into.
There's no
exactly
sound
what
in
they
space.
Want from me.
Yeah, there's no right. sound in space.
All yeah. kinds of things. But yeah, but I feel like that episode, as we get into to Best of Both Worlds, really feels like the crux, the turning point where we have everything kind of coming to a head. And I really enjoy that yeah. kind of moment. Yeah. So I don't often go to, you know, just like the battle, cool, you know, flashy type of scene, but that episode sticks out.
That episode, most people give credit to being the episodes that saved Star Trek. I mean, the Next Generation, that
sure.
the new villain, they ended with a cliffhanger. Nobody had done that before.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like Who Shot JR. This is actually Star Trek ending with a cliffhanger. And
right.
And that was a big deal. Yeah. I mean, for me, I would pick, and I have, either the Inner Light. And if you don't remember Inner Light, it's the Picard with the flute one. You remember that one?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, man. And then, yeah, that's a good one, too.
That one almost gets me to cry every time I watch it. I mean,
yeah.
It's just such an emotional one.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. It really
especially is. At the very end where he's holding the flute and Patrick Stewart himself is almost crying in that scene, which is just
right.
so powerful. Either yep. that one or the other one is actually a season two one, which I don't have a whole lot for season two of Next Gen. Measure of a Man, when Picard establishes Data as a sentient life form, that whole court case scene with you
yes.
know, classic Star yep. Trek moment, really.
Yep.
Those for me are the two strongest episodes of that. So that's where I stand. So I've given you my favorites now of all four of the major, you know, late 20th century, early 21st century. Shows, so I guess that's enough for me, huh? You pretty much know what I think, so.
So, Rob, where can people find you? You want to go ahead and give all of your socials and promote your podcast as well, so
that's
people,
true.
If they like your voice, can come find you?
It's a little bit different. Different style podcast, yes. For those of you who don't know, I co-host a podcast with my former colleague, Mike McKeever. Mike is a New Testament PhD from Graduate Theological Union at Berkeley, and he is New Testament specialty, and I'm the Old Testament guy. And so we go through the lectionary four texts every week. We release it a week before the lectionary text. It used to be 2 weeks, but we missed a week back in June when Mike's brother passed away. So. We are still keeping it up now that I'm here in D.C., and it is titled Reading in Church and Other Distractions, and we have a Twitter handle, Reading in Church, and a Facebook page, Reading in Church, and a Gmail address, readinginchurch@gmail.com.
You guys have some sweet swag, too.
Yeah, and yes, that's true. We do have a store on Zazzle that Mike has created. Believe it or not, I'm the grown-up on that podcast. That's why it's fun to be here, because I don't have to be the grown-up here. I can just mock Kyle and tease Alan. But I'm usually pretty nice to Ashley. But
yeah,
but
professional courtesy, we'll call it that.
Yeah, professional
right.
courtesy.
Yeah. That's what it is. We were colleagues at one time. So
yeah, so there's no reason for it. I think he just likes me more.
That could be. I'm the grown up there, but Mike is nuts, and he's created a phone case and a binky for children. If you need a pacifier, you can get a Reading in Church binky. T-shirts, bags. I mean, he's done it. He's put it on everything. So there was something else he did that was just crazy. Coffee mugs. He's made coffee mugs. That one's not crazy. I can't think of what else, but
I'm
yeah,
so glad you guys are still doing that podcast, though, because I remember like when we were all moving roughly around the same term, I was like, oh, no, I hope they don't stop doing, or I hope there isn't like a big, long like break for their podcast. And then when I found out you guys were still doing it, I was like, oh, thank God, because I need something to stay consistent during our move. And it's been the most comforting thing to listen to on the bus.
Oh, that's funny. That was actually a question that came up at every point of the interview process with this church. You guys are still going to do the podcast, right?
Really?
And, yeah. And several of the church members are faithful listeners now and actually have their Sunday school classes listening. And that's sort of the basis of their research for Sunday school class.
That's incredible.
Which is hysterical to
that's
me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. So in the church bulletin in the worship folder, under my name and title and you know, senior pastor, it's Reading in Church Podcast is our Facebook page. That was the only place that, you know, we need to put it out there. Let you folks know you're doing a podcast. Okay.
That's awesome. I think if anybody told me they were doing a Bible study based off our podcast, I'd be like, oh, no.
No.
You
no,
need
no.
to not do that.
Bad idea.
No. That's a mistake. Let me pray for you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please.
So thanks for the, you know, for the shout out there.
Oh, absolutely. MinMax listeners, you know where to find us. Funny note, I actually just discovered that we have had two people add us on Snapchat.
No way!
So, Kim added us on Snapchat, and Andrew Thompson added us on Snapchat. So we're going to be snarting that up. I'm going to be actually jumping in and doing a holding content strategy for us and doing all sorts of fun stuff.
So fancy.
So minmaxpod at gmail.com, minmaxpod at Instagram, Snapchat,
Twitter, Facebook,
MinMax Podcast on Reddit, 773-789-9369 if you want to call in and leave us a message like Alistair did.
And
if it's longer than 3 minutes.
You don't have to just insult Kyle. You can actually say nice things.
We love you, Alistair. Thank you for calling.
And with that, guys, I think we will see you all next week.